We've got original FDH Lounge dignitaries Nate Noy and senior editor Jason Jones on the phone lines with us. Rejoined now, we had him earlier in the show, our good buddy, a valued member of the 21st Century Media Alliance, the scout Ken Bex of FirstDownScouting.com. We are about to move off of NFL back to college here, but Scout, I want to take the opportunity to ask you before we do that here. I just picked everybody's brain before the break here. One positive surprise and one negative surprise for NFL teams for this year. Who comes to mind for you?
I tell you what about those Lions positive?
Hey, you're there.
I
with
the Lions.
You're there with Jason. Jason said the same thing.
I didn't even know. Yeah, I like the Lions. I'm liking the combination of, Stafford and Calvin Johnson. And, they're piecing the line together on the offensive line. I like the running back situation with Javon Best. You know, Aaron Brown, even a guy, you know, you might want to look out at who came out a couple years ago from TCU. And, their depth at wide receiver, you know, they might can use a little help there. But I definitely like the pieces they're putting together. And the one thing I say, I like their defense. They're young, they're aggressive, athletic. And I think Schwartz is really starting to put something together over there. On the downer, I'd say, I'll tell you. And I also like Frisco, by the way.
Okay.
I'll tell you, a team, how about, well, I wouldn't say Denver because they really weren't. I think Atlanta.
Okay.
Because I'm going to tell you, I think they're kind of like at a standstill. I mean, I really don't see them improving too much more. I mean, they got the quarterback, you know, and Ryan. They got the running back. And Turner, but other than that, you know, I like the receiver. Who's the receiver they got over that way? Roddy White. Decent offensive line, but I really don't see too many playmakers over on the defensive side other than Abraham.
Okay.
Off the top of my head, so I'd say Atlanta. You know, they're one of them teams that's going to stay pretty much at nil or drop a little bit.
Okay. Interesting. All right. So let's get into the college here. We've gone through some general stuff. We've gone through the pros to this point in time here. So we've looked at a couple of different aspects here of what we're going to be covering here tonight. And we'll start in terms of looking at some of the biggest shoes yet to drop. Actually, and let's see. We got Nate on the phone lines here. So let's see. Nate, all right, you back on, buddy? All right.
Yeah, that was my phone that time. Sorry about that.
No problem. All right, I think I dropped line two. I'm pretty sure that's what you were on. So let's just do a check here. Fellas, all three of you's on?
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
All right, Scout, I didn't drop you, did I?
I don't think so.
Aha! All right. Excellent.
Rick, can I have you do an NFL question for the Scout before we jump into
college?
Oh, yeah,
go ahead. Go ahead.
Well, first, I got to say, what the heck's going on, Jason, out there in Colorado?
it's Tebow mania. I'll tell you, for the best of being in any city following any major NFL franchise, if you were to ask everyone you could, there would be a dramatic push for everyone, and Ken, you might like this, that most fans are more inclined to want to see Tim Tebow, Jarvis Moss, Wesley Woodyard, and those types, than they are to line up and see, Noshon if he plays tomorrow, and Kyle Orton and DJ Williams.
Right.
Wow. That's
right.
That's
hey, how's
weird...
my boy Jarvis doing over there, by the way, real quick?
Oh, he's doing great. He got in the backfield a few times in that last game against Pittsburgh. They took a sack away from him, but he got another one within the quarter.
Not bad.
Well, Nate, you teased it before. Veteran broadcaster that you are, setting a hook for the audience here. Question or questions here for the scout before we start to get into the college game?
Well, some of them are college-related, so I'll save that for that area. But I'm curious, in terms, he used a term earlier, that you and I talked about without the scout about the evolution of the NFL and how things have, kind of evolved throughout the 80s into where we are now. And you use the term every down back, and there aren't that many of those now, if any. And do you think we'll ever see another time in the NFL when there are, quote, every down backs. I mean, almost every team utilizes, you know, multiple backs, putting people in and out. You know, 30 carry a game guys don't exist. Do you think we'll ever be back to that, or do you think the NFL is, you know, pretty much set in the way of you need a couple studs at running back to win in the NFL at this point?
You know, with the size and speed of these defenders now, I think we're going to probably get away from that. I think it's going the way of the pitcher, you know, pitch counts, you know, touches. I think they're doing the same thing because even like an Adrian Peterson, I mean, you are going to have to kind of watch the touches. I mean, as good of an athlete he is, I mean, it's just, you know, the pounding these guys take. I mean, looking back, you know, Rick, you know, I'm not trying to throw the age thing out there, you know, between me and yourself. But, I mean, if you remember Earl Campbell, I mean, at this point, if I remember right, he can't even walk, can he?
Right.
He's I mean, you know, and I mean, these guys are probably taking just as much of a pounding now. So, I mean, I would personally like to see, you know, the 20, 30 carry guy because, I just love it like that. But reality, you know, and these guys want to get 2-3 contracts, too, if they can. And you're not really going to do that. You're taking a pounding in the first two contracts. So, no, I really don't see it. I think there's going to be more like a pitch count even for the running back position because, quite honestly, I think that's probably the most, at least on the offensive side, the most demanding position there is.
Yeah, no question about it. The physical toll, like you said, you know, that's like Exhibit A for the Players Association when they're talking about guys who are so beat up in their old age. I mean, it's kind of heartbreaking when you think about somebody with the physical skills. I mean, you know, somebody that brought such beauty to the game as a Gale Sayers. And dude is just having a lot of problems getting around these days. You know, it's like you don't want to look at Gale Sayers and think about him this way. You know, your mind wants to remember him, you know, on that. And just on a side note, too, I just want to put this out there when we're talking about stuff. As far as whenever on the opportunities when I'm able to get together with my nephew and my nieces every year or so, and it's not nearly as often as I'd like because they're out of town, but they love to sit with their Uncle Ricky and watch stuff on YouTube and everything like that. You know, it's one of the things they love to watch the most when I pull up some Gale Sayers films for them. They love watching that stuff. That there's a tip out there to anybody if they're watching YouTube with kids. Gale Sayers, the kids will be oohing and aahing.
You know what, Rick, I don't mean to cut you off.
Go ahead.
It's weird that you bring that up. I was just talking to my son the other day, and the one guy, and I brought this guy up to you earlier, and if the Chiefs don't start him, they need to check themselves on this. But the closest guy that I see in the game right now that resembles Gale Sayers is Jamaal Charles at the Chiefs.
Yeah. Unbelievable that they may not start him.
For the record, too, I think it should be noted that the scout mentioned that, not the Gale Sayers relation, but that Jamaal Charles is the real deal previous to Jamaal Charles draft day.
Yes. Let the record show that. That is what you were very, very prescient on that, Ken. Any longtime listeners of the station know that.
Right. Well, hey. Good listening to that. I remember. I'm going to have to give you some nuggets on that one, Jason. What kind of Big Mac you want? Big Mac, Burger King, what's going on here? You're pushing me for something. Subway, what's going on?
You called it. I'll tell you what. On college football here, the announcement coming down here tonight about the divisions in the Big Ten, the divisional breakdown, Ohio State and Michigan will be in separate six-team divisions. I'm scanning a story right now. I don't see anything that says that the game is not going to be played the last week of the season. It's a protected rivalry. They will play each other the same.
Tennessee, Alabama, or it's one of those, like the SEC model, where you only rotate out two of the games. You play five of the teams, you play twice every 5 years.
You know
That's
what?
The plan.
Here's the only thing anybody cares about. I found it in the story here. There is a possibility of playing back-to-back, which means they keep it the same weekend. That's all anybody really cares about, that they still play every year and that they still play the same weekend. So it's funny because I wanted to ask you guys about this, and it's before, you know, on the very night that we're doing this, on the eve of the college football season, that this kind of comes down. So we'll do these. Nate, I'm going to start with you because I know how much you've looked at.
I've not heard the divisions, Rick, so can you share
this? Oh, yeah. Good point. I'm looking at this in real time here, fellas, so... let's see. All right. They haven't put names for the divisions yet, but here's what they look like. The one is going to be, it's basically a West-East thing. I'm looking at like Iowa and Wisconsin being in different ones, but it's more or less West and East. The more or less West division would be Michigan, Nebraska, Iowa State, Michigan State, Minnesota, and Northwestern. The more or less East division would be Ohio State, Penn State, Wisconsin, Illinois, Purdue, and Indiana. So this is the question I was going to pose to all of you guys here tonight. Nate, I'll start with you because I know the volume of research you've been doing on all things college football over the last several months has been staggering. What do you think are some of the biggest shoes yet to drop in terms of conference realignment and consolidation? There seems to be a consensus that it's on hold right now, that once the Big 12 did not have that vivisection performed on it but remained intact, now as kind of like the Big 10, I guess, if you want to call it that, but it basically, like, we're done for now. There's talk still about maybe the ACC swallowing whole the Big East, finishing the process of what they've done before since the ACC never became the football powerhouse we envisioned when they expanded. There's talk of other various things here, Mountain West, WAC, maybe a possible reunion between them, although there's a lot of bad blood at the moment. Start with you, Nate. What do you think some of the biggest shoes yet to drop are in terms of the continued movement on the college football landscape?
Okay, here's my thought, Rick. First of all, they're in the middle of the four-year evaluation process for what conferences do and do not stay in the BCS. And the Big East, Cincinnati helped them a lot last year, but I think the Big East is really down this year, And they could play themselves out of the BCS. The Mountain West, at the same time, is right where they need to be in the BCS. So I think 2 years from now what's going to happen is we're going to have the Mountain West absolutely is going to be in the BCS. The Big East, kind of, I'd say 40 to 60, not going to be in the BCS. If that happens, I would look for the Mountain West as a BCS conference to up to Houston to, are you there?
Yeah. Yeah,
okay.
I'm sorry, I was
grab
just catching through
Houston,
the scout.
Maybe grab up Nevada with that rivalry with Boise since they've added them. Possibly, depending on how the next couple years go, you could see maybe an ECU or a Southern Miss, one of those schools, also get into the mix, into the Mountain West. I would expect the Mountain West to go to a 12-team division, adding three teams after they become a BCS conference. If the Big East loses their BCS status, those teams will run for the hills so quick it won't be funny. I mean, it will basically dissolve if they lose the status because, without the guaranteed revenue from the BCS, the Big East is in serious trouble.
Yeah, wonderful call on that the BCS seems like it's going to be a big determinant on this because it already controls so much of the market share and who's in and who's out. Scout, I know that much of what you're looking at is basically between the lines, but are you picking up on anything here in the next couple of years, schools that may be moving from one place or another?
Not too much. The one thing I'm hearing is about the independency. Now, I haven't heard the last thing as far as BYU. Are they still independent football-wise?
They're with who? Mountain West fellas?
They're Mountain West.
Yeah.
Okay. So Notre Dame is really the only major independent right now.
Army, Navy, Notre Dame. That's it.
Okay.
Those are the only three independents in Division I.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I guess my question would be to you, Nate, is, I'm not too up on top of the different divisions, what's going to happen as far as that goes. But what do you think, the outlook might be as far as Notre Dame down the road?
I think they'll be themselves as long as they have, the big money from NBC every year. I don't see Notre Dame having a reason to do that. We talked about that earlier. One of the selling points for Notre Dame in terms of recruitment is we're on national TV every single game. All of our home games, seven or eight of those, are going to be a featured game in the weird time, 2:30 start on a Saturday, where everybody's watching part of that game at least every single time they play. I don't think the incentive will ever be there for Notre Dame to jump into a conference. Big Ten would be the only one they would do that with, and I think, again, we won't see Notre Dame do anything for at least a few more years. They've also got the guaranteed BCS money coming in, you know. I mean, right. And all they have to do is win 10 games, and they get in the BCS bowl. If they join the Big Ten, you know, and Kelly will probably have them at 10 wins at some point in the next few years. They join the Big Ten, all of a sudden the games aren't as, you know, this year they play five or six legitimate opponents. They have five or six games that are layups. You know, the path to getting 10 wins is a lot easier when you can schedule anybody you want versus you're forced into eight of those games. And if you're the, you know, the eighth best team in the Big Ten, you'll never see a BCS bowl. So I think it'll be a while before we see Notre Dame make any kind of leap. I think the Mountain West is definitely the one to watch, though. I think if they get that BCS status, they'll look to add three more teams, go to 12. And that's the curious thing, what three teams would move up a level. Houston, and that's one of the guys we want to talk about later, their quarterback and their system. They're always turning out these NFL guys. You know, yeah. Houston certainly could probably fit into the Mountain West.
No, there's that's definitely the case when you look at how that could fit. Before I move to the next question here, Jason, anything that you have a sense of as far as how this might shake out? You're out there in the western area here where you've got all of this Mountain West, WAC, Pac-10 sort of stuff going along. Now that Colorado's joined the Pac-10, you all of a sudden are in the middle of Pac-10 country, which you probably didn't envision when you moved to the Denver, Colorado Springs area. So any thoughts you have on the continued moves to be made, Jason?
Well, yeah, I haven't really been as keyed in on what potentially could happen. However, at the same time, I'm absolutely in love with what is happening. The only thing that I would have found better, and I know a lot of people don't want to hear this, is I wanted to see Texas and Oklahoma go somewhere. Not necessarily to disavow the Big 12, but I just really love what's going on with the Big 10 specifically. You know, before it was always depending on each year. There was always Ohio State, Michigan, but then maybe Penn State was good this year, whereas Iowa might be great in the next couple years or whatever. But you've got this sort of stability, it seems, there, especially with this divisional thing, where you've got four big dogs as far as history of college football. And I'm not saying they're the four best or anything, but as far as we go back through history, Ohio State, Michigan, Penn State, Nebraska are all very serious programs. I really do think I'm going to come to really enjoy that. Colorado going to the Pac-10, I think, is funny, but that's a whole other story. Let me just say this. For anyone in Colorado, anyone who's a CU alum or fan of the Buffs, I feel it's my duty to tell you that you are not one of those programs. You have not ever been one of those programs. And just because you had a nice little run back in the 70s and Cordell Stewart for a time does not make you one of the great programs in this country. So,
hey, don't forget Westbrook now there, Jason. They did have another guy.
There's a big rub there when they didn't pursue him because, you know, Colorado loves their hometown boys. But so as far as, like, how it's going to shake out, you know, I'm pretty sure there's going to be no movement in the SEC because they're real strong. I agree with Nate on the Big East issue. I think that's just an inevitability at some point. But I'll tell you, from my perception out here, people for the last couple years have been clamoring for the Mountain West, saying that if they just were given a shot and just given the respect that is granted to the Big Tens, SECs, Pac-10s, and Big 12s, that they would play on par with the big boys. And, you know, you looked at TCU last year, and even Air Force from a time to time can sneak up and bite bigger teams. BYU is a big factor. So I'm really looking forward to seeing what happens because, as we all know here, those who have been in any of these college football conversations with me, I'm a big fan of the big teams in the big conferences. I've always said that, you know, outside of that Big Six conference circle, I really don't care. You know, if a team or a conference can step up over a long period of time, say shades of Gonzaga in college basketball, and establish themselves, then I'm on board. But you got to play the big dogs to get that kind of respect. So I really hope we see that with the Mountain West. And I would even invite the idea of Houston. That would be interesting. So we'll see what happens. I'm enjoying it, albeit not having any insight as to what may or may not happen down the line, but I will definitely be entertained by it.
I can imagine that. I think we'll all be entertained by it. By the way, Michael Westbrook, going back to him, I think Stephen Davis would tell you, Michael Westbrook was a guy who redefined the phrase dangerous practice player. I think we can all agree on that point. So,
Rick, I got to throw one more thing in there, too.
Yeah.
Two teams that have just been mentioned, BYU, all right, their stadium, Lavelle Edwards Stadium, holds 64,000, which is the 36th largest stadium in NCAA football. They averaged over 64,000 every single game last year, 27th in attendance. The same time, Colorado, Folsom Field, only has a 53,000-seat stadium, and they had a couple games in the mid-40s, so their attendance is not where they need it to be. BYU is a major program, 60-plus thousand every single game, and believe me, stadium size and your fan following has a lot to do with where you end up in the next 10 to 15 years in this whole realignment thing.
So. I think so, too. You know, and as far as the college football landscape, that's going to lead me to the next point. And again, Nate, I want to start with you because similar to some of the earlier questions that were kind of centered around conversations that I'd had with Ken or Ken's experience with the USA football team last year, this one centers around something that comes from you, Nate. A couple weeks ago on the show, we featured your expose about this. I think it's going to be one of the big stories of the year, and we're going to be pounding the drum that you heard it here first about how Boise is doomed from the start in the national title hopes, even if they're the only undefeated team, because the computer polls are going to be the death of them. They have basically no chance of cracking the top five due to strength of schedule. So to me, that's the biggest story of the year, because that could kill any remaining shred of BCS credibility if they're the only undefeated team and they're on the outside looking in. So the question I'm going to pose to all of you guys, starting with you, Nate, what do you think are some of the biggest stories of the year in addition to that? This could be anything you want, from the big intersectional or conference games of the year, noteworthy players, last-time conference matchups due to realignment, anything you want. Start with you, Nate Noy. Take it away, buddy.
Okay, Rick, much in the theme of what we talked about earlier, surprises, and on both ends of the spectrum. First of all, I don't think Pittsburgh's that good. I think the Big East is horrible. I think Pittsburgh's going to finish maybe third or fourth in the Big East. There'll be a lot of people disappointed they'll be dropping out of the polls after the third or fourth week. But in terms of a surprise, I really think, and as much as I hate to think this, I think Michigan is going to be strong this season. I think you know, it's the third year of Rich Rodriguez. His guys are in there to play his system. Tate Forcier, you know, had got his year of learning underneath him, and I'd like to hear the scouts take on him as a prospect. But I think Michigan's going 9-3. I have them tied for second in the Big Ten. I think that the Ohio State-Michigan game will actually mean something this year, and I think that'll be a major story. If Michigan resurges, you know, they're going to have an immediate chance in the second week. I mean, UConn, they play immediately. Who I project to go 9-3 as well, and then they get Notre Dame. So, you know, Michigan won't be under the radar very long. If they whip up on UConn and Notre Dame, they're going to be there right away. And I think if Michigan is good after the last two seasons they've had, they'll be one of the biggest stories all season long.
Interesting. All right, let's go to you, Scout. What do you think some of the biggest stories of the season are going to be?
Well, definitely a Tim Tebow factor. The TV won't have Tim Tebow to spotlight every 10 minutes from each game. So I definitely want to see how the quarterback position gets filled over there and see how they overcome that. The Big Ten, I think they're going to really start taking a hold and be a top-flight dominant conference like they once were. I'm not sure they can take over the SEC, but they do have up-and-coming stars that are starting to really take hold. You get more of the sophomores, juniors coming up now that are, you know, now you're juniors and seniors. They're just deep from sophomore, junior, seniors now, and I think they're going to start taking over and really establish, you know, themselves in the bowl system. There's a few teams still in the Big 10, 12, however you want to call it, that are lagging back, but I think the top six or eight teams are, you know, pretty much holding their own. The one big thing for me is going to be Terrell Pryor, you know, how he develops, because more or less Ohio State is going to go the route that Terrell Pryor goes. I mean, I just want to see how he starts to develop as a quarterback, not as an athlete. I mean, the time is now, and so I really want to see how Terrell Pryor does, and can't wait till next year to see how Big Rig comes in and see how they do on Nebraska Big Ten area.
Yeah, and I think so much of the very, very premature Terrell Pryor Heisman talk is based on assumptions that he has developed and everything like that, especially beyond what we saw of him. Because as I pointed out earlier, even in the Rose Bowl, you saw some bad habits from him. He made some other plays that made up for it, but we're taking an awful lot on faith to say that that guy is anywhere near being a Heisman Trophy candidate. The early games will show it. Yes, even the Marshall game, I think, because we'll be able to tell from his mechanics and how he's looking on the field, the level of competition may or may not. Yeah, I don't think that'll necessarily come into play as much, Ken. I think we'll be able to discern, and especially somebody like you as a scout, who's more looking at tendencies, and tendencies are not always necessarily determined by who the opposition is. I'll bet you'll be able to pick up on that right off the bat, won't you?
Well, I was looking at game film from last year, and even in the bowl game, you know, he did a great job as far as, you know, overall stats. But, you know, one thing as an evaluator, the one thing I don't go by, I'll tell you right now, is stats. I could care. Yeah, you know, I really could care less about your stats, and I know for a fact that Jason can attest to this. When it comes to stats, All American, All Conference, that has nothing to do with transitioning to the next step.
Right.
So when I go to look at game film, I really don't look at you know who the heavy hitters are. I just look at the game film and see who stands out.
That makes sense. Jason, what do you think? Some of the big stories of the year in college football?
Well, I think the biggest thing, I don't know if it's a story, but the biggest concept for me this year is going to be how a great number of big-time college players have moved on seemingly at the same time, thus leaving us with the other team. So, you know, with Tebow gone, with the departure of Pete Carroll, with what's going on with Ohio State, I'm left to be really intrigued by the games and the matchups that are not marquee, which also leads into my confusion as to why the AP 2 through 5 is the way it is. I will give Alabama the benefit of the doubt because they're returning so many starters. But going back to the Terrell Pryor thing, I don't understand at all why Ohio State is consensus number two in the country. Same thing for Florida being, I believe, at five. I think they've just lost too much, or Ohio State may just not be there yet. You know, maybe they create that throughout the regular season. But that'll be interesting. But to me, you know, watching some of the games last season, yeah, Alabama is going to be fun. And, you know, if Florida and Ohio State and Texas are as advertised, maybe that'll be fun too. But I'm looking more forward to, you know, teams like TCU and the new-look USC and Florida State, Miami, teams that used to be prominent and always in the forefront that we seem to have forgotten unless you happen to tune in that one week and see a spectacular game with players you knew nothing about. That's the stuff, the little guy stuff, the other teams are the thing that I'm most looking forward to.
Well, those are very interesting storylines to play out. And as far as how some of the teams are ranked and the merits and lack of merits of that, that'll play out shortly here with our college football team draft that we're going to have after our somewhat belated top of the hour break.
I got a question, Rick, while you're talking about the preseason rankings.
Well, I'll tell you.
If you can throw this out here maybe next segment or whatever. I was wondering, you know, the other guy's thoughts on should they, you know, abolish the preseason rankings. But I'm going to tell you, a lot of these teams, you know, if you're starting out in the top 10 to 12, you got a chance maybe to, you know, go to the BCS. But if you're outside of that, it's almost impossible to get back up there.
That's a great question, Scott. We'll tackle that now. Are you going to be able to be a part of our draft on the other side of the break here, by the way?
What time is your draft? Is it going to be 9? Because I got to leave at about 9:20-ish.
Okay, well, that'll be in the next segment here. So I'll tell you what, we'll tackle your question right now here.
Okay.
Start with you, Nate. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, there's arguments both ways. You know, the Harris poll does wait until I think it's at least week 3 or 4 before they actually release their first poll. And the other thing you got to remember is the computers don't care. And that's the whole thing we got on with Boise. I mean, back in 06, Boise was 12-0, and the computers had them ninth in the country, and eight of the teams in front of them, or seven of the eight teams in front of them, had one loss already, and the computers still had them ninth. So the computers don't even care. I mean, that's a third of the BCS. The computer doesn't care when you play the game. And unfortunately, the way the NCAA works, they don't care about the margin of victory. It's just a straight win-loss computer formula. But, you know, that evens out part of it there. If the computer doesn't care where you start, it's all based on how you do. You know, the Harris poll does weight. And, you know, I mean, people want to know where teams are when the season starts. It's part of marketing. It's just you want to have that little number when you watch the game. It just, you know, makes it so much easier to promote the event. And I think I'd be missing something. I mean, the debate of who's where, you can't stretch it into the season. I mean, and Rick and I agree. I mean, Boise should be ranked 2 in the country right now, given what they've done the last 2 years. At least the AP got it somewhat right with the 3 ranking. And, you know, the other problem is that the coaches' poll, which is, you know, clearly one-third of what happens in the BCS, is very political. If you look at the year-end results for those polls, which are released and made public, coaches vote in blocks. Coaches vote for teams in their conference disproportionately higher than anybody else in the rest of the poll will vote for those same teams. I mean, coaches make phone calls and they do deals behind the scenes. There's politics involved in that poll, and it's a shame that's what we have. But outside of creating a selection committee like we have in the NCAA basketball tournament, we're always just going to have to deal with that. I really don't see much ways to do it better. You know, and as the story will continue to follow, if Boise does end up number one at the end of the season, as I said, there is no possible way for them to go above 5 in the computer rankings. And if that happens, there is no way for them to be in the BCS National Championship game. They'll blow this whole thing up next year anyway because there'll be such an outcry. How could the number one team not make your tournament? Oh, it's the computer's fault. No, the computer's the safeguard. You know, to guarantee that the teams that play the toughest schedule that really probably are the better teams get to play in that championship game.
Yeah, that's generally how it ends up working out here. Before we go to break, just send it around, and I'll start with you, Scout, because of your time things here. Any remaining thoughts that you have, question for any of the other folks on the panel here, anything like this from anything that we talked about tonight or anything we didn't get to? So start with you, Scout.
Not too much. Maybe the Heisman. Some of their candidates, front runner guys. Off the top of my head, I guess. I have to go with. I was gonna say Terrell Pryor, but that's up in the up in the air. I'll just leave it to them. What do they think?
Well, I'll lead. I'll say I think it's going to be Keenan. I think the stats are going to tell the story. I think this is going to be one of the years the stats tilt it. So count me in for Case Keenan. Nate, what do you think?
Yeah, as I said a few weeks ago on the show, you know, I think Boise is going to be number one in the country potentially because I really believe Alabama is going to lose one of those road games. I think they're going to lose week 3 at Arkansas. They also played LSU. You know, two returning defensive guys going against a guy with the skill of Mallett. They're going to give up some points that game. I like Kellen Moore because I think that this whole outcry of, my goodness, the Boise's not in the national championship game, but they're number one, I think the voters will be like, well, we'll throw him a bone and we'll give this guy the Heisman. And that's one of the things I wanted to ask you, Scout, is what is your assessment of both Kellen Moore and Keenum, the other two quarterbacks that are kind of in the mix to lead teams to good seasons this year in the half skills?
See, that's funny, Nate. You're talking about crystal pity right there.
Yeah. As far as Keenum goes, I thought you had asked the question. I didn't know who it was. Case Keenum?
Yeah.
I kind of, you know, look at him kind of like a former Houston guy, Kevin Cole.
Yeah.
You know, similar kind of size and stature. Good release, good quick release. Not the greatest scrambler, but, you know, has good moving ability within the pocket, can get outside the pocket. Somewhat of a gunslinger at times, you know, but I kind of like that because, you know, he thinks out the box, not always so conservative. Sometimes he's not so accurate on his deep ball, but, I like his build, you know, good size and instincts. I think he's a good solid, you know, I'd say 16, 17, 8 in the first round type guy.
I wouldn't say he's necessarily a surefire first-round franchise-type guy, but a guy that, you know, if he can sit for a little bit, half a year to a year, he can come right in and do something for you.
Okay.
As far as the guy from where was that, Boise?
Boise.
Yeah, I'm not looking at him whatsoever as a prospect. I think he's a guy that can come into training camp and, you know, help battle a little bit. But as far as, you know, ever starting at the NFL level, no. He's not even. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I just had one last young guy, Landry Jones of Oklahoma. Young guy, you know, a couple years to go of eligibility, did a decent job replacing Bradford last year, even though they didn't win as many games. Is he the kind of guy you see as top five in a few years?
Yeah, he's another guy. Something about him just doesn't have me go, you know what I'm saying, for some reason. I've seen him a couple of times last year, but just really didn't get that spark. I mean, I think he's a guy just because of the dimensions. You know, he's going to be drafted. But I don't see him as an impact type of guy. Nothing that he does so well that just jumps off the board to me. He's got good size. I don't think his balls come, you know, extremely quick off, you know, off the snap of his wrist. I don't see him having, you know, quick IQ with the quarterback position like I mentioned before. But I think he's a guy that's going to be solid.
Is there another classman that we should be watching that has all those tools you're looking for that, you know, we heard it here first kind of guy?
Wow. You know, let me think real quick. You mean under the radar type of guy?
Yeah.
Wow. I'll tell you what, let me get a – I gotta think about that one a little bit.
Top of your head, though. I mean, I just.
Hey, yeah. Scout.
Usually, I got somebody off the top, but I can't think about a quarterback spot. I can't. Nobody really jumps off.
Anybody that we're gonna be like, ooh and awe in a couple years. You know, I'm sure you're the kind of guy that was like Ray Rice. Wow, watch out for this guy.
Oh yeah.
Sudden,
yeah, yeah.
You know,
well, Scout.
I'll say a guy, the Kolaris kid over at Cincinnati. Now, you know, he doesn't fit the mold. Now, once again, you know, a lot of people say, well, he's only 6 foot, but he's just a baller. You know what I mean? He makes it. He reminds me somewhat of a Jeff Garcia, but a lot better thrower, a lot better football presence, quarterback presence in the pocket, a guy that scrambles, not to run, but, you know, scrambles to extend the passing play, and but that can run. You know, and the guy, kind of guy that can lead a team, you know, the kind of guy, if it's fourth and one, he's not going to hesitate.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? That's the kind of guy I'm going to want as a leader.
Absolutely.
And he seems to be durable and, get, you know, has all the touches you're looking for, can throw the ball deep, short, leads his players good, which always, you know, extends to the yak yards for his receiver. So, yeah, that's a guy, Kolaris from Cincinnati.
You know, and you say him, just to point something out, 93 for 124 last year, completed 5% of his passes, 10 touchdowns, 2 picks. I don't know if we'll see those kind of ratios again, but 75%, that's mind-blowing.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
yeah,
Scout?
I'm really high on that guy. He just came off. I'm sure there's other guys, but and I like the kid from Nevada. Coppering, is that his name? Kaplering or something like that?
Yeah, he's
I like
he's
him
really
too,
good.
You know, for a down the road kind of guy in the NFL after a year or two sitting the bench, but he's got some upside.
Right.
But yeah, that I really like him, Kolaris, coming out of Cincinnati. He's got a couple more years. So
anybody else comes to mind, Scout? Just give me a text here before the end of the show, and I'll read it for you.
No doubt about it. I'll look right now. I'll check out my profiles, and I'll hit you guys right back. Hit you a text.
Hey, no problem. If anybody comes to mind, it's all good. I'm so glad we could have you on for this here tonight, Ken. Always a pleasure. I'm so glad that your work hours have shifted to where we can do stuff with you more often. Always a pleasure to have you on. It's been way too long.
Anytime. I tell you what, I like what Nate was bringing to the table today, because I definitely can't talk. You know, talk as much in depth on what he was going at. And Jason, you know, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. And Rick, anytime you guys want to get together, let's do it.
We love it, Scout. Thanks. We'll catch you soon, buddy.
Thanks, Scout.
All appreciate right. it. The Scout, Ken Bex, everybody, from firstdownscouting.com. Love having him on. Before we go to break here, Jason, we didn't get to you on this. There was a lot of mano-a-mano there. Didn't get to you here. Any remaining thoughts you have on anything we've talked about thus far or not talked about yet before we go into our college football team draft segment?
You know, Rick, it just sort of goes to show the level of the show that we're having here today. I was perfectly content to just ride in the passenger seat on that one. You know, to be honest with you, my approach is completely different from Ken and Nate as getting ready for college football. It's the one sport in the world that I literally don't get excited about until it's here. So I don't know that I could contribute anything close to the realm of what we just heard.
Well, this is what I love. It's one of these things where, you know, when we did this for the 100th show, it was a thing where, and you were the guy that suggested JonBenet to me in the first place from the Mile High Report. Again, I had just asked you to think about somebody who would be good, and you came back with it right away. You said, Rick, I know somebody. I used to have him on DenverSportsRadio.com with me. That worked out really well. The scout, you kind of put me on to him when you were here and still doing the shows in Cleveland. You kind of put me on to him with that. So everybody just fits together so well. And I remember after the 100th show talking to Nate and just when he commented on how it's a thing where on a night like this, it's like, you know, everybody's like even more concerned about picking up their game because it's like, holy crap, listen to that answer. What do I come back with now? So I love this. It's competitiveness in all the best kinds of ways here. Everybody pushing one another to come up with the best kind of stuff. I promised everybody some really, really, really good hardcore football stuff tonight, and we delivered. I can run my mouth like that because I know that this group can back it up. This group always does.